Welcome to the Tim Fowler Show, where production is paramount and we discuss the tools, time, and people associated with getting jobs done and making a profit. On today's episode of the Tim Fowler Show, we will be talking about co-constructing a project with the help of special guest Jordan Smith of Smith House Company in Austin, Texas. Alongside Tim Fowler, I'm your co-host Steve Wheeler. Here is the Tim Fowler Show.
Hey everyone, Tim Fowler here, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Tim Fowler Show. As we've always said, be sure and send your ideas in. Love to hear from folks, and love to get topics as well. So tim@remodelersadvantage.com. So our guest today was driving down the road one day in Texas, and he gave me a call. There was something he wanted to talk to me about. And as we were kind of talking away, what popped out was that he was on his way to a job site that was roughly 2 hours away from his office. And I just thought, you know what, this would be a great podcast just to see how does he manage that. Now, the challenge of jobs being a long way from the office have been handled in a lot of different ways that I've seen with different companies. And one way was, as Nancy Reagan, hopefully many of you remember First Lady Nancy Reagan, one of the things that made her famous was her attempt to get us to use less drugs. And the phrasing was just say no, right? And so a lot of businesses, when a client calls from way out of town, they say, no, we don't travel that far and do those projects. Secondly, and I know this has happened like in Canada and the lakes regions there, where they're working around some of those really nice lakes a long way from the office, they'll set up a trailer, mobile home type thing, and give the workers some place to stay for, say, like a 4-day work week, and then they get to come home on the weekends. Others have just built travel time into the cost of the project, and obviously the client then pays for that as a cost of goods sold. And then others have just simply, hey, I know a guy in that town, why don't you call him? And, you know, given that friendly contractor the nod. And then I'm sure there's others that I have not heard of. But our guest today chose, and these are my words, to co-build with another remodeler. And so, like I said, I thought about all kinds of problems that could have popped up. And I thought, well, let's go ahead and have a podcast, get this fella on. And so let's go ahead, Steve, and see what we come up with.
Yeah, let's do it. So Jordan Smith is the president and owner of Smith House Company, a design build firm based in Austin, Texas. He learned to build and weld while working on the farm with his granddad. And after earning a degree in welding and materials engineering, he spent the next 10 years working in the heavy construction, building everything from robots to ships to offshore oil rigs before transitioning to residential construction. After spending a couple of years working with industry-leading builders in Austin, Jordan and his wife, Veronica, struck out on their own to form Smith House Company. Smith House Company strives to build more beautiful, functional, and resilient spaces which harmonize with their natural surroundings. Welcome to the show, Jordan.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. So tell us a little bit more about your remodeling business. How long have you been actually working on it? What kind of volume are you looking at doing? And then what kind of staff do you have?
Yeah, so we are both relatively young and very small. We started this business after I was running a very large manufacturing firm in Houston. We were doing about $40 million in annual recurring revenue. And it was fun, but it was heavy industry. And I've always been entrepreneurial, wanted to start my own thing, didn't have millions of dollars to start my own thing in heavy industry. So Veronica and I had designed and remodeled several of our own homes and then built our own homes. And we said, you know what? That's an industry that has a low barrier to entry. And so I jumped from one cyclical business in oil and gas to another cyclical business in home building. And so we've been on our own here for about 4 years, and it's just Veronica and I. We sub everything out, and then we partner with builders on some of the builds, like we'll be talking about today, where we act as the design builder and then the owner's rep, and then hand that off to a builder who acts primarily as a project manager, but has a little bit more liability involved too, where they're taking on that risk. Right now, we work with cool people doing cool projects. That's our two criteria, cool people, two projects. We will do a not cool project if you're a cool person. We will not do a cool project if you're not a cool person, right? So you got to, life's too short to be working with jerks. So we're very selective about our projects, and we only build about two houses. And, you know, we start on the low end, our remodels are like $500,000. And then this build that we'll be talking about today, total project value is, you know, we'll see when we finish, but it's well north of $3 million.
All right. Now, I don't want to get too far off track here, but do you have like a little written test that they take to see if they're cool people? Because like I've sat in conference rooms with a lot of business owners, and we've dreamed about Rorschach tests. We've dreamed about all these ways. Like, how do you weed out these clients? So how do you tell if someone's a cool person?
Man, I'm not very good at doing it from just a single conversation, but the way that we structure our contracts is we do design, bid, build, I guess, right? So there's a preliminary design where we all get together and we're like, hey, what do you want to do? And this is what we come up with. And then we come up with a rough bid. And if at that point they want to go further, then we'll refine the design and get a hard number. And then after all of that process, which can be, you know, for a short remodel, might be 3 months worth of work. For a big build, it might be a couple of years worth of this iterative process to get to this final number. And then when we all look at each other in the face and be like, do we still like you? Do you still like us? They've paid for all of this work, but they also have construction documents. So if they don't like us, they have gotten what they paid for. They can go get any other person to build this. And it hasn't happened yet, but if we don't like them, we have the opportunity there to excuse ourselves and be like, hey, I think that a better builder might be better suited for this. So I don't have the litmus test from like one conversation, but after that iterative process and spending that much time with them, you get a pretty good understanding. We also do the whole talk about like, this is the honeymoon. Like, this is the best relationship we will ever have until a couple of years after this project's done. Like, once it's done, everything cools down, everybody looks at it like, okay, they really did do a good job, and the owners really weren't as big of jerks as we thought they were. The relationship can get better there too. But there's going to be, from the moment you sign the build contract, relationships start to deteriorate. And if you set that expectation early, it helps in the process for when, you know, after framing's up and everything seems to stop and people are like, why we got so fast to here and now what's happening? You're like, and remember, we said that this was going to happen at the beginning.
This is so, so incredibly good, because expectations are what it's really all about. And if we don't set them, the client sets them, and then we're in trouble. So worth the podcast right there. We could stop and have a great podcast at that, but let's move on. So tell us about this project. It's about 2 hours away. Just give us an idea. You alluded to the fact that it might be really big, but give us some idea about what this project is that you're doing.
Yeah, so we got a call, and this has been a couple of years ago now, so hasn't happened overnight, but we got a call from the client, and they said, hey, we've seen your stuff on YouTube, right? So I know that you talk all of the time about using social media to your advantage in marketing, and that's really good, and that's how we get most of our business. However, the geographical fences are harder to control on YouTube, right? Anybody from anywhere can watch you on YouTube, and they often send emails or call and say, hey, do you do jobs in X, Y, and Z? The majority of the time, it's no, right? And so that's what I told these people. I was like, look, we don't really build out there. And they're like, well, we really like what you do. Is there a way that you could? I was like, I don't know. What are you looking at doing? And then they sent me all of this Pacific Northwest, really cool modern architecture stuff. And they said, we want to do that. And I was like, well, that's cool. This is like a multi-million dollar project, right? And they're like, yeah. I was like, okay, is this going to be a bank loan or is it going to be cash, right? Because like people's people's dreams versus what they can afford are oftentimes, you know, not in alignment. And they said, well, you know, at a couple million, we could do it either way, but we'd prefer to do financing. And I was like, okay, well, let's start talking, right? As I tried to say no as many times as I can, but they really wanted to work with this. They had their money in line. And they, when I said the numbers, which turned out to be low in retrospect, but when I said the numbers that I said, they didn't say, oh, well, that's way too expensive. So then we had to start having the honest conversations with them about like, look, this is just outside of my geographical radius where I can do a good job doing this. I mean, 2 hours out and 2 hours back, that's 4 hours a day. Even if I'm only at the job site 3 days a week, that is, you know, you're quickly at 12 hours worth of windshield time and climbing. And it's just not worth it for my business and my life to do that. And I don't feel like I'd be doing as good of a job with them. Their problem was they're rural. They're like an hour plus from Houston. They're 2 hours from me in Austin. They're 2 hours from San Antonio. Like for any builder of repute doing the kind of build that they're looking at doing, they just didn't know. They didn't know where to reach out to. So fortunately for all of us, I'm a good friend with a guy who's closer. He's not super close. He's about 45 minutes away, but he is a straight builder and remodeler. He owns a spray foam company as well. So he does insulation and he does building, and he's very successful, super ethical, really conscientious builder. But this was just sort of outside of his realm of being able to pull off unilaterally. And honestly, the owners wanted me involved because they saw how I built and the attention to detail, especially on the building science side, right? It's really easy to see pretty pictures and say, that's what I want. But when you're trying to explain to builders, and homeowners complain to me about this all the time, they see Matt Reisinger talking about polywall and they're like, that's what we want. And then you go talk to Bubba or Boudreaux over in Louisiana and they're like, well, no, that's not how we build, right? And so trying to find builders who get it and can lead that conversation instead of always being, you know, the naysayers is frustrating. So what we decided to do is co-build this project, and that's what we're going to be talking about in the meat of the podcast.
Okay, so quickly, my apologies to all the builders in Louisiana. We do know that not all of you are Bubbas, but anyway.
Some are Boudreaux, some are Boudreaux.
So let me just ask this question. If you did not have a friend in that area, would this have been a no deal for you? Is this primarily that you said yes because you thought you had somebody that you already knew in that area?
Yes, I think so. My dream is to be able to expand this out, especially as a designer, is to be able to do great design for people and to help both owners and builders find that middle person who can help execute the dreams into reality. But without the relationship of knowing who the builder is, it just adds another level of complexity and risk.
Yeah, I picked up on that. I think that's a pretty key point for all of the conversation. So what do you anticipate would be some of your issues with doing this? You're 2 hours away, you've got a friend or somebody at least that you know that's actually doing the mechanical work, but what were some of the issues or problems or challenges that you sort of anticipated? And maybe like, what did you do from day one to kind of make sure that those challenges didn't become big, huge burdens for you?
Yeah. So our biggest concern was point of responsibility, right? Because if we are co-built, you know, the only ship that doesn't sail is a partnership, right? That's the, if there's two people involved, and the homeowner doesn't know who is taking what in what aspect, or the builder, you know, conversely, the builder's sitting there and the homeowner's telling them one thing and the designer's telling them another thing. It can get really sticky if there's not clear points of ownership. And so we really haven't reinvented the wheel at all on this. All we've done is we've took a design build. We've broke apart the design and the build. So I'm just the designer. Michael's the builder. And then we've added a owner's rep portion in the middle of it, where I transfer from a designer to an owner's rep once that build starts happening. So the builder comes to me for design details. And even when the homeowners approach him about, hey, can we do this? Hey, can we do that? I'm always kept in that loop and he's looking for approval from me. So the homeowners know that's the chain of communication. So they're not bothering him with a bunch of, well, what about this? What about that? He can pass all of that load to me. And I'm responsible for selections. I'm responsible for drawings, details. I'm the liaison with the engineers. All of that is me. And then the builder gets to do what the builder wants to do, and that's actually build it. He's managing all of the subs. His contract is directly with the homeowners. So at the end of the day, all of warranty work comes back through him. All of the liability for, you know, if this thing falls down, that's back on him, right? So it's super clear contracts. It's three different contracts: designer, builder, and then an owner's rep. It just looks a little bit different because the owner's rep and the builder are really working closely together to make sure that it's executed properly.
It sounds a little bit like an architectural agreement, an independent architect's agreement with a client, where the contractor is the primary contract with the client, but the architect is actually inputting design and drawings and things like that as they go through. Yep. What's the legal framework of this? Is there a contract that spells out all these things? And what does that look like?
Yeah, so we're running the Texas Association of Builders contracts. Okay. It's one of the great benefits of being part of the Home Builders Association is that I have access to all of these contracts, and we've just bolted them together. So the builder's contract is the builder's contract. It's straightforward. It's a cost plus contract between Michael and the owner, right? So that's the ownership there. We've got two separate contracts. We've got a contract that is a design contract on the front end, where we say, this is how we're doing this. And then we have an owner's rep contract that as soon as we hand off, so the timeline, I'm talking with my hands here, so I need to say this in words. The timeline looks like, you know, the first contract is design bid. And this is a cooperative bid between me and Michael, between the designer and the builder, right? Because we know what we want to accomplish and we know we have a budget, and then trying to do that iteratively. So we come up with a preliminary budget, then we do a final design and a final budget. Once that final budget is approved, that goes into the builder's contract. So that's that first document in the builder's contract saying, this is what we are building to. Now it's cost plus because things can move, and that's where we felt most comfortable. But that is between Michael and the homeowner. My contract at that point from the design is finished, right? I've billed all of the money. I have delivered the construction docs. The engineer docs have came in. Everything is compiled and handed off as CDs to the builder, and I'm done. Then this co-building portion of it is the owner's rep portion of it. And again, that's a standard owner's rep tab contract that we just have a hourly, or sometimes it is per function. You know, you can break it up however you want to break it up, whether it's just an hourly rate or whether it's a retainer, or whether it's like, we are doing these specific things in this specific timeline, and this is going to be the billing for it. And then we might have another one with an interior design. We do a lot of that work too. So we try to keep things very small from a contract standpoint, very small, very focused, to where there's not that soft mush of, well, who's doing this and who's doing that? Because like we alluded to earlier, the best relationship is right when you sign the contract. We don't want to compound, that's the word I'm looking for. We don't want to compound the problems by having poor communication from the onset of who's responsible for what. So just having super clear, structured contracts helps us do that.
So my world is a fairly limited in the sense that I, you know, mostly design build. So this is the first time I've ever heard of an owner rep contract. And I kind of like that idea, even from an architect side, breaking it up into those three different things. Hi, Tim Fowler here. And if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've likely heard about our Roundtables program. Well, I'm here now to tell you that we have a very similar program for production managers. If you're not familiar with it, a few years back, we took the Roundtables concept that's been so popular with Remodelers Advantage members, and we started groups specifically for production managers. Very similar in format to what the owners are doing, but focused on production issues and really diving into the best practices among some of the best remodeling companies out there. We meet twice a year for 2 days at each meeting, collect and discuss performance metrics for each company, and we support each other throughout the year with what we call as microboards, smaller groups of peers who meet monthly via Zoom to discuss issues and ask for input. So whether you are a business owner looking to improve your production team or a production manager that might need more help taking your department to the next level, we have a spot for you. If you're interested in learning more, email me at tim@remodelersadvantage.com and I'll tell you all about it. Any other issues that you were concerned about as you got into, you know, starting to plan this thing that you were able to mitigate by taking some proactive step?
Well, you mentioned knowing Michael. I mean, I think that's probably one of the biggest risks that we mitigated just by having the long, I've known Michael for 15 years now. And as a friend of mine, as well as an excellent builder. So not having that piece in place is probably the biggest risk and probably the biggest reason to say no to this type of arrangement, because you add building is tricky, especially custom builds from the get-go, because you're building a prototype. Like, this is the first time anybody's built this thing ever before. Right. So I know more than most people about it, but there's still things that I don't know. That's complicated from a homeowner's perspective, right? They're hiring you because you're supposed to know how long it's going to take and how much it's going to cost. And in our crazy times of inflation and materials and everything, when you say, I really don't know how much it's going to cost or how long it's going to take, you know, that's already a problematic position. If you combine that with a builder who you also don't know, now you're just adding a third cog in the machine that it all could go wrong really fast if you don't have a solid working relationship with the other partner in the build.
All right, cool. So what are some of the good things that have come out of this that you've maybe that you didn't expect that makes it all worthwhile, so to speak?
A couple things. First thing is it allows us to work in a larger radius. Like, if we can figure out how to do this well with other builders, it can alleviate a lot of the complaints that I hear about from builders talking about the customer relation portion of it. Like, if we can take that portion of it off the builders, it makes their life better. It also can alleviate the homeowners' concerns about builders who aren't responsive, who it's hard to get them to try new things or whatever they're trying to accomplish. So being able to do more work on a larger geographical area is interesting to me, and I'm excited about. The second thing that I don't guess I really thought through, but really helps, is because Michael's such a great builder, we detailed, you'll see pictures if you follow over at Instagram or wherever on Smith House Co. or Jordan Smith Builds, you'll see pictures of what we're doing. And the goal is that the whole structure, all of the framing on this build is exposed, right? So there's no hiding everything. It's like a mass timber light or a timber frame with modern engineered wood. I don't know what you exactly call it, but at any rate, all of the framing is exposed. So that beam is actually a functioning beam, and it's the finished carpentry, and you're putting it in on the framing stage, right? So there's all this attention to detail that has to happen. And it's cool because I think of everything that I can think of, and that's probably only like 50% of the equation. So there's 50% that's unknown. And working with the great builder, you're able to come in and be like, man, I wouldn't have thought of that, but that's a really cool detail. Yeah. That, you know, it takes a lot of the heavy lifting off of having to think of all of the details when you're working with somebody else. It just expands your talent base working with other really talented people.
All right. So I know you're a really positive guy overall. I think that comes across really well in the couple of times that we've chatted. What are some of the challenges that popped up after you got started, or some of the things that you might have said, wow, if we had seen this earlier, we might have done something a little bit differently?
I think finances, because at the end of the day, somebody's got to pay for all of this. And that somebody is, well, supposed to be the owner. Turns out that if you don't structure it properly, there's, you know, with Cost Plus especially, any change in the budget is a sore spot for everybody. You combine that with having a third party now as an owner's rep who's also charging to figure things out that you feel like as the owner should have been figured out before you started. It is a standoff, not in a bad way, but it could be a bad way, between me, the owner's rep, saying, hey, we really need to figure this out, and I've got to be paid X amount of dollars to figure it out. The homeowner saying, well, I thought we have already figured that out. You know, somebody, we feel like we've already paid what it should have been. And then the builder being like, well, don't look at me. You know, I mean, it's, I'm just here to build it. So we have found that we have spent more time than we've been compensated for on this one, because it's such a large project and because it's so custom. It's definitely, in its current form, it's not going to make anybody rich, right? Because it's just, you just have to be very careful about expectations and where you stop doing that work and where you start charging for more work. And that's probably the biggest gray line on this one that I see. It's not that anybody is not doing the right thing. It's just at some point, somebody's going to be feeling like they're taken advantage of when the things that were unexpected pop up, because it takes time to figure it out. And that time has to be compensated by, and nobody feels like it really should be their responsibility.
You know, this is,
even if I do feel like it's my responsibility, I might not like it. Like, well, crud, this is going to take me another 20 hours. And technically I wouldn't feel right if I got charged for it. So we'll just eat that.
This is a really interesting point about time and material work, where a lot of people think, oh yeah, it's a no brainer. You never lose any money. And this is exactly the point that comes up, is that this challenge of figuring out, like, should it have been done earlier? Should it, you know, those kinds of, I think, Jordan, you said it really, really well, really points out the fact that it's not just a cakewalk to do something in a time and materials type fashion. So really, really good. All right. So we're going to kind of wrap things up here. Lessons learned, advice to other contractors that might be thinking about this, sort of in a nutshell, to kind of wrap things up.
Yeah, I would say that in general, I've been both a builder for designers and architects. I've been a design build, where I do the whole thing together, and I now have done the design with a builder building it. In general, I think it's a great idea to have another set of eyes on the project. I mean, if you're a great design build firm and you do everything from soup to nuts, that's great. Don't be afraid of taking on jobs that there's another architect or designer in. You learn a lot, because everybody has different backgrounds and different experiences, and it really accelerates how much better you get in a faster way.
Yeah, I remember working in Potomac, Maryland, where we were building houses that were designed by an architect and architectural firm. And I think I learned to appreciate good design by doing that. I mean, we did good projects remodeling as well, but just the difference in the style, I think I learned to appreciate the difference that I brought to the table. So I think that's great advice. Well, Jordan, thank you so much for spending some time with us. This has been a lot of fun. I think we talked about a lot of different things in this podcast, and I hope people see some of the subtleties that are there.
Yeah, I have one last question.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, Jordan, one last question as I'm thinking about it. Do you think that you would do this even if, you know, the distance wasn't the main contributor to not taking a project? Is this something you'd incorporate, you know, if it was just a larger project than you're used to, or some other, you know, thing that would play?
I definitely think so. There's a lot of times where we're approached is just because of the stuff that I've done on YouTube is a lot of the building science portion of it, right? Got where it. They're saying, we don't have a builder who will do X, Y, or Z. That may be true. That may, they may just not have found the right person, but it would have great building needs to be done more. So I would love to partner with even local builders who maybe they want somebody to be a liaison with clients, right? Y'all work with remodelers all the time. And one of the top complaints you hear is they're not getting our selections to us, right? The job's on time and now we don't know. So being able to be that liaison between the two on that owner's rep is something that we would absolutely look to do locally as well to help both builders and homeowners.
Cool. Awesome.
Very cool. Thanks a lot, Jordan. Take it easy.
Take care, Jordan.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Steve.
Tim, this was interesting. I didn't know much about what we'd be talking about today. So this was, this is fascinating to see that they took this on and the things that they put in place to make it work, or, you know, so far sounds like it's going really well.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of little subtle things in here, like I mentioned right at the end, where I hope people pick up on a couple of things that I wrote down. YouTube. Now, most everybody knows I'm not a big social media guy, but Jordan's finding a great deal of success doing things on YouTube and then clients calling and saying, hey, can we get that? And of course, that was the primary impetus for this. I really keyed in on the friendship thing with the builder. And then I started wondering as we were talking, like, how do you cultivate that friendship? So in other parts, or in other words, in the town 2 hours north of you instead of south of you, how do you cultivate that friendship with a builder so that you do have that resource if someone were to call you from that area and be able to call on that individual? Relying on the Home Builders Association contracts. I think a lot of people have contracts that don't work, or if they work for them, if they ended up in a legal problem, then and maybe don't cover everything. And so I really like that part of it. And I thought just the idea of being able to do this because he wants to do cool projects, and cool projects don't always come to you where you live. And so just the idea that, yeah, I'd like to be able to do things that are maybe cutting edge, you know, building science, all that kind of stuff. So perhaps I have to fish in a little bit bigger pond. And so I have to make this relationship work in a way that's good for everybody.
Yeah. And I think, necessity is the mother of invention. So a lot of it was put together based on this opportunity of a cool project, but 2 hours away. Now, you mentioned the friendship part. I think that's a huge piece of the whole thing. There's a book, I think it's Stephen Covey's son, and I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but it's called The Speed of Trust. Yeah. And it just talks about how when you have trust as a basis of the working relationship, there's amazing things that can happen. Because, you know, in this situation, there's a lot of risk. You know, you're working outside of your process. Nobody wants to do that. And developing a new way to build. So now this is really, really awesome. Would love to have a follow-up to see if he does it again, or if there's more projects to talk about.
So just one last thing. I want to just address all the people out there that are going, yeah, but he's not making any money. I'm going to challenge everybody. The first time you tried something new, like you went from kitchens and bathrooms to a whole house remodel, did you make any money? probably not. There's always a learning curve. And what I heard Jordan say was he's learning, he's testing the waters here, he's seeing what works and what doesn't work. And that by making some tweaks, then if he can do this again, he'll be able to make some money.
Yep, that's called the J curve.
There you go.
All right. Well, we want to thank Jordan Smith for joining us today. We want to thank you for listening to another episode of The Tim Fowler Show.
And remember, at The Tim Fowler Show, we're working hard to eliminate "it is what it is" from your vocabulary.
This has been another episode of The Tim Fowler Show. Want to hire Tim and fast track your growth? Visit remodelersadvantage.com/consulting to learn more. And if you'd like more information about roundtables, our world-class peer advisory program, please send me an email at steve@remodelersadvantage.com. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the show and comment on iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.